The following presentation is from North Pine Baptist Church. We trust that it will help you learn more about God and His message for the world. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.
Good morning, friends. Andrew is my name. And this morning we're looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, right in the middle of our Bibles. The book of Ecclesiastes, along with the books of Job and Proverbs and Song of Songs, part of what's called wisdom literature. So it's a particular type of literature which helps us to think, how can we live and make sense of this world? It wrestles with those questions, and we'll see that today. So we're going to look at, it's a way of sort of introducing, I guess, wisdom literature. I thought we might look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1. I'll be reading for us. It's got 18 verses. I'll read those to us, and we'll then consider that together. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, reading from verse 1. The words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. And to the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, are chasing after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I've increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. We have the confidence to know we've just heard God speaking to us this morning through His word. I don't know if you've heard about Danny Hillis, but Danny Hillis was a child prodigy. He designed his first computer when he was 12 years of age. In his 20s, he was the guy who designed America's first supercomputer. He used parallel architecture, which is he got a whole lot of CPUs working together at once, which at the time in the 80s was the fastest computer in the world. It sold a few years later for $500. Scrap metal value. And then in 1989, in the lead up to the millennium, someone's old enough to remember the millennium and the fears of the millennium bug. When the lead up to the millennium, Danny Hillis began working on something that he thought would be a bit more permanent. Along with that other group of Americans, he began working on a project to build a clock, you may have heard of it, called the Millennium Clock. And it's no ordinary clock. It's set inside a remote mountain range in West Texas. And it has been designed to last for 10,000 years. It only ticks once every year. As an Amazon founder and part funder of the project, Jeff Bezos comments, "Humans are now technologically advanced enough that we can create not only extraordinary wonders, but also civilization-scale problems. We are likely to need more long-term thinking." I think a 10,000-year clock ticks the bill. Friends, let's think about it at the moment. I mean, the pyramids are only about 5,000 years old, and they're already getting a bit worn on the pointy bits. And so it's a big ask to build a mechanical clock built to run until the calendar reads the year 12,000. But that's the challenge. Danny Hill has said there's a real appeal in trying to build something permanent, something of lasting significance, something that will really make its mark. That tourists are going to come and marvel at not just this year or next year, but in 100 years' time, and in 1,000 years' time, and 1,000 years after that. And Danny Hillis said he really wants to make his mark, to do something that lasts. And Hillis says that he wants to do something really worthwhile for his life. And building something of significance for him will give life a meaning. Well, friends, this morning I just want to begin by asking you, I wonder what you are doing that's really going to last. What are you doing with your life that's simply not going to turn to ash? Well, sort of Danny Hillis is a lot like the guy who wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, which we've just read this morning. It's a book that looks at exactly the same problem he's looking at. That is that nothing seems to last. I mean, the word Ecclesiastes means the one who teaches the gathering. And it's sort of a kind of a mysterious, anonymous book because the writer never tells you his name. He just calls himself the teacher and drops a few clues, like that he's one of the kings of Israel, the son of David. Lots of people say it was written by King Solomon, which it may well have been. But he doesn't say. All he says is what you see in verse 1 of chapter 1, the words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. And the teacher is looking for meaning. He's looking for something that lasts, looking for satisfaction in a throwaway world. These days he might build a 10,000-year clock. Back then, he could have built a pyramid. But instead, he wrote this book. And if you read through the book, you see it's sort of like a book of experiments, really. And in fact, in verse 13 of chapter 1, it tells us his goal in writing it. He spells out what he's setting to do. He says, "I set out to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven." Just cast your eyes to the next chapter, chapter 2, verse 3. Read what he says, sort of second part of the verse. He says he's exploring everything under heaven, looking for meaning. He says, "I wanted to see," verse 3, chapter 2. He says, "I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives." He's searching for meaning. He's searching for something that's going to last. Now, friends, I don't know where you're up to in your quest for this at the moment, on your search, whether you've even really started it. But if you're a thinking person, you want your life to have meaning, which is what makes sort of Ecclesiastes such, I think, a great book to read, because it's the account of what this one guy finds. He goes picking and examining and prodding the things we do to find out which of them, if any, give life meaning. Because sometimes when you look at the rat race, if you're anything like me, it's just hard to see the point. Everyone's and everything's just running around in circles. And do you know what the teacher learned, what his conclusion was in the book? Well, fortunately for us, we don't have to go very far into the book to find out. We don't have to wait right to the end. He tells us right from the start, it isn't one of those complicated books where you've got to dig right in to find out what he's saying. Because it's all there in his opening words, verse 2, chapter 1, as he looks at the world for something that lasts, and he simply concludes, meaningless. Meaningless. Everything in life is meaningless. And if you go through the book, you'll find that he uses his exact words again and again and again. In fact, 35 times we find it. In older translations, sometimes it comes up, instead of saying means, it says vanity, vanity. Everything is done in vain. The particular word used here, the Hebrew word, means vapor or mist. Up at Mount Tambourine recently, woke up, mist over the valley. Hour later, the sun had broken in, it's gone. So that's our lives. Here one moment, and then we're gone. Read through the book and count. 35 times. 35 times he says he's looking for meaning in life, and he finds none. A lot like a columnist in Sydney Morning Herald, Kerry Savile, tripped over this article she wrote just a couple of years ago. She says this, and says, what is the point of life? What does it all mean? Why are we even here? She says, I remember asking myself these questions night after night, lying next to my pink lamp in my childhood bedroom. As a teenager, they seemed to be the most important questions in the world. Perhaps the only truly important questions. And now, as a mother of three, I rarely ask myself those questions. It's not that I've found the answers. I'm simply too busy living my life to sit and contemplate its meaning. But my own teenagers are asking these questions because that's what teenagers do. And frequently they direct the questions to me. What's the point of it all, they ask? What does life even mean? I wonder whether you can relate. Meaningless, meaningless vapor mist, says our teacher. Often the teacher says it the way we find it there in verse 14. He says, no matter where you look, life is as meaningless is trying to chase the wind. Again, look at verse 11 of chapter 2. You'll see it again. He's trying all the things that people say give life purpose, that give life meaning. And they just don't work. So he says, verse 11, chapter 2, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Or just five verses later in verse 17, the same thing. Trying to find meaning in this world is like chasing the wind. Or again, verse 26 of that same chapter, he says this too is meaningless, that chasing after when everything that he tries is like trying to catch the wind in a hurricane. Now, you might be thinking, and this guy's got a problem. I mean, he needs to take some antidepressants, quite frankly, and have a good lie down. Which is sort of, I think, exactly the way we want to treat people who actually authentically try and grapple with the realities of life. So we live in a world that's purpose-built to try and stop people asking these sorts of questions. The world says, look, don't think about meaning. Don't think about ultimate purpose. I mean, that's too depressing. So have another drink. Make another dollar. Play another video game. Watch another YouTube clip. Take another pill. Just whatever you do, don't ask the hard questions. But the bottom line is that if this life is all there is, we live, we work, we die, it's just a matter of sort of what you see in this life is what you get, then you may as well face it. I mean, if that's what life is like, then be real, be honest. And that's exactly what the teacher's doing here in the book of Ecclesiastes. He's not being depressive, he's simply being real. And so back to verse 2, chapter 1. It says, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. It says, what do people gain from all their work at which they toil under the sun? I mean, that's a good question, isn't it? It says, look, what's the point? What makes life worth living? Why bother getting up in the morning and going to work? Why bother mowing the lawn on Saturday or taking the kids to sport? And if you're a typical Aussie, like I said, you try not to think about it. We all should be working on the basis of some sort of a trite answer like, oh, I'm working hard so the kids can have a good education. Oh, why? Oh, so they can get a good job like me. Why? So they can get their kids a good education. And round it goes. That's our lives. I mean, what's the ultimate point of it all? What's the point of our lives? That's the question that the teacher is wrestling with in the book of Ecclesiastes. That's what he sets to find out, because in spite of all his wealth, in spite of all his success, the fact that he's got it made, the teacher is searching for meaning. Because when he looks at the rat race, you simply can't see any point in it all. And that's what he says right throughout this first chapter. And that's a problem we have, isn't it, when we're trying to find meaning. So you keep reading in verse 3, the question he says, what do people gain from all the work of which they labour under the sun? And the answer is, when you get right down to it, is absolutely nothing. That's his answer. He says, generations come and generations go. The sun rises and the sun sets, and then it rises again and then it sets, and the wind blows to the south and then it blows to the north, and just like a giant treadmill, we're like rats in a cage. You know, Harry Chapin, he famously wrote that song, yeah, Cats in the Cradle. But he also wrote another song, another hit song, in fact, that it went like this. He says, all my life's a circle, sunrise and sundown. The years are spinning round and round. They just keep rolling round. And that's what the teacher is saying here. So you keep reading, have a look with me, say verse 7. He says, all the streams flow into the sea, and yet the sea is never full. He said, life's an endless cycle. Yeah, if you're a worker, you've been at it a few years, you'll notice, now you do a day's work today, but there's just as much work to do tomorrow. You solve one set of problems this week, and there's another set next week. You go to work, come home. You go to work, you come home, 5 days a week. Once a week you mow the lawn, and once a year you wash the car. I mean, over and over again, there's those little streams flowing into the sea, but it simply is never full. It's life on a treadmill. are really no different to a mouse in a cage. And the reality is, the teacher says, from his vantage point, that is what life is like. Which really raises the question, really, is it really worth it? I mean, if you're sort of under 25, you're still only on the first few loops of life. Sort of fun, maybe, watching the scenery go round. Hit 30, well, still not bad fun. 40, starting to wear a bit thin. And you know, it's simply not going to get any better. It's like the teacher says in verse 8, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, or the ear its fill of hearing. What has been, he says, will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. And sort of worse than that, he says, look, no matter how much you achieve in this life, when you're gone, you're going to be forgotten. Like a retired sports star. I was listening to a podcast recently of a player interviewed recently, Brett Kenny. That name may mean nothing to you. Back in the 80s, it was a big name. I know Jeff knows who it is. It's a big name in rugby league back in the 80s. Played for the Parramatta Eels, the greatest side, by the way. Played for Australia, won grand finals. He'd done it all. But in his interview, he said, when he retired, he just struggled to find a job. He battled cancer. He struggled financially. He had little support from the club by which he'd given his best years to. Retired. Forgotten. Nobody knows him. Nobody cares. See that there in verse 11? It says, there is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come won't be remembered by those who follow. I mean, it's true, isn't it? I mean, if you think that you're going to make your meaning in life through making your mark by doing something significant, then friends, think again. Now, someone once said, the words on your tombstone may as well be written like a finger in a pond. Then how much more our achievements? They're so fleeting, they just don't last. And the teacher's been around enough. He's checked it out, he's looked at life, and that's his verdict. Life is about as meaningful as sitting on a merry-go-round. Round and round, up and down, sort of fun at first, but he's been around the loop enough times to realise it's not going anywhere. Seen it all before. And you see, if you reckon work's boring, I mean, you're right. If you reckon one day is pretty much the same as the next day, you're right. If you reckon generations come and generations go and you won't be remembered, you're right. If you reckon you've just designed the world's first supercomputer this year and in a few years they'll be selling for scrap metal, I mean, you're right. If you reckon that Christians are meant to be happy people who shouldn't think about this sort of stuff, you're wrong. In fact, Christians of all people are meant to be realists. And so in verse 13 of chapter 1, the teacher says, I devoted myself to study and to explore all by wisdom what is done under heaven. And then he says, look, what a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. He says, I've seen all the things that are done under the sun, and all of them are meaningless, like chasing after the wind. Meaningless, 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 like trying to outrun a wind gust or trying to get your fingers around a puff of air, chasing after the wind. If you sort of keep reading through the rest of the book, you'll see the teacher trying out different things in his search to find meaning in life. Tries money, sex, power, achievements, family, success. Funnily enough, all the things that people are still trying today. Now, friends, before we all sort of go up home discouraged, I don't want to leave you discouraged. There's something that I do want you to notice. There's a little phrase that keeps popping up in this book of Ecclesiastes, an important one. It's a little phrase that you really need to understand and keep in mind as you're reading through the book. It's sort of like the interpretive key to reading it. There's three little words that keep popping up again and again and again. It's the words under the sun. Under the sun. First appears in verse 3, we read it, chapter 1. What do people gain from all the labours of which they toil under the sun? I'll just jump ahead a few verses to verse 9. He says, there is nothing new under the sun. Or verse 14 says, I've seen all the things that are done under the sun, all of them are meaningless. Now, can I say up front, he's not saying it's better to be to have like a desk job rather than to be like a council worker. He's not saying that. Under the sun doesn't mean that. Under the sun means life that is meaningless. Life that is futile. That's what life under the sun means. Certainly for him, life that is under the sun means life is futile and meaningless. And yet, really what the phrase means, living life under the sun means living life which has no regard for God. No regard for God. It's living life without God being in the picture. It means living life and living it up and just thinking there's really nothing beyond this life. Life under the sun means the clockwork life. Now you're born, the sun goes up, the sun goes down, you die. Full stop. That's all there is. And when you think about it, that's the sort of life, that's the sort of worldview that many people in our society have, isn't it? The world that says, look, this life is all there is, so make the most of it. Make your money, have your success, enjoy life now, because when you die, you die. The teacher's response, though, is that living life like that just doesn't work. He says living life like that simply renders it meaningless. It's meaningless as chasing after the wind. Now friends, at this point really it's crucial for us to sort of understand what's the teacher's purpose in this book. Really, what he's wanting us to do is for us to realistically feel the full weight and the futility and the weariness of living life under the sun, of what life is lived like without God in the picture. For the sort of appalling inference is that life lived under the sun, life lived without God, part of the picture at all, has no meaning. In the end, nothing matters. But if you're a person this morning where God is in the picture, if you're a Christian person this morning, then we know that this is not the whole story. Remember, this is only the way life looks. If we look at it from this under the sun perspective, as if God isn't there at all. And the use of this little phrase, if you like, is meant to be almost draw like a horizontal line between sort of earthly and heavenly realities. Looking at life under the sun, so looking at it from an earthly perspective, from the ground level, leaving God completely out of the picture. And yet there is another way to look at life. And that is that there is a God in heaven who rules over the sun. And so really there are just two ways to live. We either live life under the sun, with God not in the picture, or we live serving under the God who rules over the sun. Life lived with God in the picture. And that is the key, that is the difference to whether life has meaning or not. You know, we're not simply limited to an earthly perspective on things. Rather, we can also see things from a heavenly perspective, sort of above the horizontal line, if you like. And the reason the teacher sort of shows us the weariness of our existence, making us feel more and more disillusioned with life under the sun, is to remind us that we just can't expect to find satisfaction in earthly things, but only in God himself. That's not to say that if you believe in God, life will be trouble-free, or that we'll never experience the weariness or frustrations of life. Not at all. But Ecclesiastes at least opens up to us the possibility that we can live an above-the-sun approach rather than an under-the-sun approach. And living with life from an over the sun perspective brings joy and life and purpose and refreshment to our lives as we still live in this fallen world. So as I conclude, I thought it might be useful to think, well, what might an over the sun perspective, life lived with God in the centre, how might that compare with living life under the sun? God not in the picture. Well, let's think about maybe, say, creation. Sort of from an under-the-sun perspective, the teacher looks at the natural world and fails to see any progress. It blows to the south, it blows to the north. Doesn't go anywhere. Rivers flow into the sea and yet it's never full. Round and round it goes, up and down. No progress. Everything's just like clockwork. But an over-the-sun perspective with God in the picture sees God's hand at work in creation. You know, Psalm 19 begins, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands." You go out after, you look at the sun, and over the sun perspective, oh, well, I see God's handiwork at work. Under the sun just sees the sun. My uncle spent his life in medical research at one of the big universities here in Australia. Not a Christian. Spent his life researching about DNA. I was having a conversation with him. He said, oh, as I studied DNA at so intricate. There must be something more. I said, oh, you're right. It's God. But he wants to dismiss God. Oh, no, it's not God. It's just science. Just science. It's an under-the-sun perspective. And yet the repetition and regularity that we see, the sun coming up each morning and going down at night, or the rain falling on the earth like we experienced yesterday in this, yeah. And all these things, from an over-the-sun perspective, point to the goodness of God, the orderliness of God. The wind blows at his bidding. The water flows at his command. It's all part of his control. I mean, what if I turn to success, because it's really quite different way you view success from an under-the-sun versus an over-the-sun perspective. See, an under-the-sun perspective, what does the world say success looks like? It says having good career and influence and power and money and enjoying life to the full with all the trimmings, right? That's success. Friends, I want you to listen to what Jesus said a few hundred years later in Mark chapter 8, verse 36. He says, what good is it for a person to gain the whole world and yet forfeit their soul? He says, look, what's the use of winning in life if you're going to lose it all? What's the good of having the top job, the best house, the new car, the big bank balance, the great holidays, the respectable family, the food and clothes? I mean, what good is it in the end if you're going to lose the lot? See the news yesterday? Jeff Bezos, world's first trillionaire. Though he's kept his views on religion pretty quiet, seems to be he's got no interest in God. Having all that money, being the wealthiest person in the world, if he does not have life at the centre, what good is it going to get him on the final days? He stands before God and God says, empty out your pockets. His $1 trillion were about as useful as monopoly money paying for your petrol. What about just our life in general? Looking at life from an over-the-sun perspective causes us to, you know, the things that we experience in life, we experience them differently. See, the teacher asks a question in verse 10, is there anything of which one can say, look, there is something new? Well, maybe not from an under-the-sun perspective, and yet the God who rules over the sun, he's always doing new things. I mean, every time someone becomes a Christian, God has given people a new heart, a heart that wants to obey him. Through the work of the Holy Spirit, as believers, we grow in holiness in all sorts of areas in our lives. In fact, in God's eyes, it says, Paul writes in 2 Corinthians, we are a new creation, he says in chapter 5. The old is gone, the new has come. And while we live in a wearisome world, we know that this world and our experience of this world won't last forever. God promises in his word that one day the heavens and the earth will be destroyed, be consumed by fire, and there'll be the new heavens and the new earth. And that day we won't be looking for anything else to satisfy us other than simply being in relationship with God himself. In fact, our senses will be saturated with the glory of God. And so, friends, this is something to remember when we, in the days that we feel frustrated or angry or sad or disappointed or feel the impact of age or sickness, things in life getting broken, us getting broken, or falling apart, or things going wrong. Friends, we need to remember that this life is not our final destination. This world is not our home. We were made for a better world. And the very fact that we are weary of the things in this life points us back to the God, the only one who can provide satisfaction for our souls. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, we've all probably been around this world long enough, done a few loops of the sun, to realise the truth of what the teacher is saying. Father, life is wearisome. We have good days, we have bad days. But Father, in the end, for apart from you, life does not have meaning. Father, this morning, if we are followers of Jesus, Lord, may we embrace the life that you give us and enjoy the things that you give us, but not look to put our meaning in them. And Father, if we are someone who at this stage is not following Jesus and is living life under the sun, Lord, may this be the day when they turn to you, ask for forgiveness of sins, and Father, embrace an over the sun perspective through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thanks for joining us for this presentation from North Pine Baptist Church. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.